You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's library, books that he has read over the years. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lisette Guevara and Jim Golnick.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about mind hacks for self-coding. Wow, that's a lot to unpack. What does that mean? What are we talking about?
So you're talking about computer?
Computer. We're hacking into the computer, otherwise known as our own brain. If you have certain reactions in certain situations that you want to change, certain feelings or behaviors, when being put into, like, maybe thinking about your relationship or on your driving to work, communication with others.
Mm-hmm.
That you may want to change how you react in those situations, or we're going to kind of try to hack into the brain and see if there's a way we can do that.
We can reprogram your brain.
Ooh, let's look. We want to talk about the relationship spiral.
Oh.
What does that mean? Well, we'll talk about that in a second, huh?
Yes.
Self-sabotage. How we do things in relationships. If we talk about romantic relationships or just relationships with other people sometimes, that self-sabotages that relationship. Maybe we're on a team, and as our team starts to do better, we start pulling away, and we get less active, and we start thinking badly about ourselves or something. We'll talk about self-sabotage. The other three things we'll talk about, but I will say we won't go into in too much detail,
mm-hmm.
is anxiety, phobia, and depression. We don't want to address those within this show. If you have a challenge that you think you would need professional help, it's really good to get
Go to the doctor, help. Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy today, what it is, and, bless you, and how we can use the tools and tips of that therapy in our own lives to hack our brain. Every breakup starts with
marriage
or relationship or, and what we mean by that is that sometimes we focus on how bad it is and we go, oh, it's terrible, it's awful, I'm getting a divorce now, I feel bad. But there was some part of our life in that initial relationship, right? When we thought that this was great.
Yes, when you are in love, when you have your
prefrontal cortex shut off.
Yes.
It was great. It was fantastic. When I didn't have to think, it was fantastic.
Yes. After time.
Thinking is overrated.
Yeah.
After time, things change. But the point being is that if we can go back in time and just think about the beginning of any of those types of relationships, there were good things that both people are basically, and I'll say basically, potentially good people in certain circumstances with the right other people. And it may just be that you're in a bad mix.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. So sometimes when you have time and you know who is the person that you be and also the person
who you are and who they are, and then realize,
and
you know what? I understand now why we don't match. I understand now. Yes, if the person
need time. Yeah.
It does. But if that person's a liar, a cheat, an abuser, we understand that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who just no longer get along how they used to get along.
Different personality, not necessarily.
Where things change over time.
Yeah.
Or not change over time, but they actually become what they were meant to be after that brain shut off, after the brain was turned back on.
Exactly.
But in cases where we actually want to try to think about how do we react better, how do we relate better to our relationships, because we're in the stage of, you know what, this is a good relationship, there are some troubles, but let's figure out how to communicate. That's what we're going to talk about a little bit here. Part of it has to do with the three pieces to how we act. If you can see this on your screen, great. If not, we'll read through it. That how the feelings we have, the emotions we have, interact with the thoughts and interact with our behaviors. That there's these three things that are always discussed together. Feelings, thoughts, behaviors. You can say emotions, values and beliefs, actions. There's all these other ways of saying it. But really, there are these three things that we focus on. And we really will focus on these three things for cognitive behavioral therapy. Is it how these three things interrelate that allow CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, to do something and do something positive in many people's lives.
So how would you can make a difference between feeling versus thought or behavior?
Okay, well, let's just think about thought. Thought is just things we think about. Let's pull the emotions out. Thought have no emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, we have beliefs, we have thoughts, we have values.
But one thought can create emotion.
It can create an emotion, but then that emotion mm-hmm. is now. Mm-hmm. You have to think yourself into an emotion. You have to situation yourself into emotion. Mm-hmm. You have to relate yourself into an emotion. It's very hard to hold an emotion continually. That emotions are emotion. Motion is part of emotion. Motion meaning they're moving feelings. Mm-hmm. They're not steady states. It's when they become a steady state. That's when you're always anxious, when you're always depressed, when you're always angry. That is really tough. For most people, emotions come and go depending on the situation, what they're thinking about. What if they're doing something and they hit their finger and they're, ow, and they're like angry that they hit their finger, they're angry suddenly. It's not like, oh, I think back about yesterday when I hit my finger and boy, am I angry. Different level of emotion.
I may be angry now from the last week problem.
Oh, so angry. And some people get angry or get happy and that emotion goes away pretty quickly and you know, that's it. And others hold on a little bit longer. Yeah. It's where it becomes something that you can't let go of is where you should probably go and seek some outside guidance, some outside help. But here we are to kind of maybe for those people that are in between, it's just something they're holding on to for the full day. It's holding on a little bit longer than they want to. We'll talk a little bit about how to get past that, some of those tips and tricks from cognitive behavioral therapy. So we looked at that. Let's see what's next on our list here. Oh, how do feelings impact our actions?
It depends. So some people can be active. Other people can be freeze. So depend of the situation, depend of the feeling. Also, the human don't know how reacting in the real, real scare moment.
Okay, so let's talk about fear. Let's specifically talk about fear. Fear, you can have fear in many ways. And the picture we have on screen is you know, when you're really fearful, you move or freeze. It's, you know, the flight or the freeze. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You had flight, fight, and freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a couple of actions that happen when you have strong fear. And then also, how do you react to, do you have control or do you feel that you're being controlled by some external force? Like if it's in a relationship, I feel like I'm being controlled by that person, but I'm fearful of the relationship. And the fear may be, I'm fearful of losing the relationship. And because I'm fearful of losing the relationship, I act in certain ways that actually contribute to the loss of the relationship.
And the sabotage part. So because the stage of the scared moment is difficult to people process well the information.
Right.
So I guess the first step
That's true.
Has to be recognize that you are in a scare, because maybe you say, no, I'm not scared about that. I'm not scared, but you are checking. So you try to first recognize, really, I am scared for this situation.
So let's talk about that for a minute, that the emotions are so strong, the changes how the blood flows in our body, changes how our heart is beating, changes how our eyes see what we hear. You know, sometimes it can make time just seem really long because we're so in tune with our fear and I'm listening to every sound. And so time can slow down. But what that may also do is we can think of certain things very quickly, like actions. I'm going to run, I'm going to move, I'm going to do this, I'm going to grab that. Maybe that's something that fear helps us with for survival. But what it might not help with is complicated, multidimensional thinking, especially when it comes to maybe a relationship and complex human beings and how they talk with each other.
I have one example. The friend that she is so jealous person, and the guy is scared for her jealousy, so he become stressful in any moment. So when they go to one restaurant and he see a lady, she's so angry because he watching the lady, but also he say, I am so nervous, they start to watching around.
Yeah.
And then create, that is the self-sabotage, because you're scared. It's like the dog, you know, if you are scared of the dog, you start to create some kind of smell, the dog can and bite you.
So she would smell him and get angry at him.
Yes.
But I could see going into the restaurant, he sees a woman that he knows his girlfriend's going to react to. Mm-hmm. So he turns his head to avoid her, but his face turns red. And now she's like, why aren't you looking at her? Why is your face red? He's like, if I look at her, I'm in trouble. If I don't look at her, I'm in trouble. So he just pokes his eyes, wears dark glasses. Not again?
No.
But I can understand that. That's a stressful relationship.
And this
relationship.
Is one example, how people feel scared and then create a problem. So the discussion is established because you are in the middle of this kind of sabotage situation.
That's interesting. Yeah. So let's go on to this next thing here, which, what happens when you are in fear in a relationship? What can happen in communication?
So one of the typical problem is people assume some situation. So you believe, because we keep going with the same example of the guy.
Right.
So the woman assumes, you are nervous because you see somebody that you knew, or why you not watch this person, and they start to create an assumption, is the word?
Sure.
For the situation that maybe is not real, and it's important to have open communication to discovery what happened.
So let's go back to this. Now, I'm going to do it from her standpoint rather than his standpoint. She's jealous. Because she's jealous, she's more aware of what he's doing. And then she thinks he's actually looking at somebody because his face turns red. And for her, it's proof and reinforces she should be jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, he gets even more scared because every time he sees somebody, she reacts worse and worse.
And also, he tried to talk, but he's so nervous. And then this is when the people also drop different name of somebody in the middle of the conversation. He said, why you mention this person? I don't know, but your brain, playing, and then they create all this.
Yes, Ingrid. I'm sorry. Did I do that again?
Yes.
So conflicts, incongruent communication, right? So you're trying to have a good communication, but you're so stressed emotionally. That what you're saying doesn't match up to your feelings or your emotions because you're so worried about saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And then conflicts, right?
And of course, conflicts. And they create the conflicts, and this is something like that.
It just keeps getting worse and worse. Yeah. So let's talk about why sometimes people get super jealous, why sometimes people have personality traits, emotions that just don't seem to be like adult-like. And when I say adult-like, what is that called?
Immature.
Logical. No, why they're not logical, why they're, why they, and So I think some of it has to do, we talk about what happens when we're babies. And I think we do one where we if you remember this one, where I just lay down on the floor and I start crying. And now I'm crying on the floor and my parents decide to pick me up or to let me cry. They let me cry. That could be cruel and unusual punishment. Or I could learn that my crying was fake anyway. I just wanted them to pick me up. And they didn't. Okay, now I'm not going to do that anymore. But as time goes on, I learn that I can't use the crying or the, oh, I hurt my knee, hold me, give me something, give me some candy because, you know, I feel bad. That you can't use that as you grow up and you learn that, that becomes a learned behavior, that I can't use these emotions against people and manipulate them to get something.
Yeah, that's is one point about if we're talking about conflict and this situation, go back to the picture of the couple have discussion. And then typical first, everybody want to be right, you know? So the ego show to protect you that you have to be right in this conversation. So both child try to manipulate the situation to versus the thinking more adult way that they try to solution or looking for some better way. So that is the Mr. Ego.
Mr. Ego. And talking about Mr. Ego, Mr. Ego gets developed in our little infancy state. Some of it may be inborn personality, some may be learned. We've talked about that in the past as well, that we want to protect ourselves. The only self-concept we have is of ourselves, right? We have concepts of other people, which are probably wrong to begin with because we base them upon norms and what society says. But
the ego is not, most people say ego is bad. Ego is part of the our personality for protect ourselves. But if you have so much ego, you become arrogant, or you have a less ego, you know, you become like the infant.
Well, with less ego, you can be like, okay, I want to help everyone else. I am less concerned about myself, and maybe you find yourself in helping others. So by helping others, that's when you feel best about yourself. Where others, by helping myself, I feel best about myself, right? So I'll take some of that, I'll take some of that, I'll take some of that. I feel so good. And then there are others like, hey, let me help you, let me help you, let me help you. When I help you, I feel so good. So those are extremes. But that's all how people have developed their egos and over time.
Yeah, again, it's no negative, just the way how you recognize your level of the ego. It's just for protect and balance your life.
Got it. And continuing on with this, as we're running through our first segment very rapidly here, that when you have that arrogance, when you have that ego that's trying to protect itself, it wants to stay in, it wants to stay comfortable. So it's going to deny things. It will not see certain things that it doesn't want to see to protect itself. And it will see things that support its own views and biases. So the ego is a self-perpetuating thing. It's part of that, how do we create biases in ourself?
Yeah.
So it doesn't like the unknown area, so it will always go to the things it knows, right? So rather than researching things it doesn't know and learn more about something, it will assume everything it is looking at from its own perspective. And we'll look at the next thing here. Oh, and we'll get to the sabotage cycle. And I think what we're going to do is look at it for a second. And here we go. Here it is. There's a lot in there. Kind of hard to see on screen, but we'll talk about fear starts the sabotage cycle. And I guess you can jump in at any point. But you know, there's something that's a situation or a stimulus, but it's a fear. And then, Go ahead, Lizette.
No, if you click more, you see fear.
Okay. Oh, look at that. Oh, you know what? Thank you. My darling co-host here has put something into the presentation I didn't know existed, which were things pop
again.
Up. So fear, and then up contradiction. Can cause contradiction.
So, the same history about when you are scared or fear in some situation, you maybe become contradiction in your attitude, in your action, in your communication. So this is create the conflict.
Got it.
So that conflict is difficult to make a solution because Mr. Ego tries to protect you and say, okay, everybody is wrong. You are the only right person.
Got it. Because it wants to protect itself. I have now false confidence. I am right. Everyone else is wrong. And it's not done in a malicious way, right? It's just done because it's just for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's library, books that he has read over the years. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
We are talking about self-sabotage. We're talking about the ego. We're talking about how we do things to protect ourselves, and maybe not in a malicious way, but it can lead to anxiety. It can lead to conflict. It can lead to miscommunication in a relationship. And we were about to talk about a couple of ways that maybe we'll be able to address that.
Some kind of code or program to reprogram your brain.
Reprogram. So let's start off with, I'm going to knock this back on the screen here, and on the left side it talks about how to address. So if you are feeling like you're in a cycle, if your things aren't going well, you have a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of fear, and that relationship or that communication isn't going well, then one of the things is not to assume. Mm-hmm. Don't assume what the other person is doing. Don't assume why they're doing it. What's this other one? Objective self-auto-observation, so observe yourself.
Yeah. We're talking in past program about how you can train your brain to have auto-observation. It's some kind of exercise that you need to see how you talk, how you your body language, your all kind of feeling in the moment that you have situation.
And
what did you say to? Some people forget what it
says. What do you say?
Yeah.
So, like, there's a camera on you, and that people are watching what you're doing. It's almost like pretend the spirit of the world is watching what you're doing. And are you a good contributing spirit to the world, or are you hurting people in your communication? And then finally, the empathetic or empathy communication, full of empathy, really trying to understand and be there for people in the communication. Mm-hmm. So if they are having a hard time and they're upset, hey, don't just defend yourself, but hey, I hear you're upset. What? Tell me about why you think this and why you feel this way, rather than, no, it's not me. I didn't do it.
Oh, the other is typical, put your own example. In this case, I do this. Everybody's different. You cannot put your own recipe to others.
That's exactly what I say all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Oops. So in terms of a relationship, we always talk about the mixture that all relationships are based upon the two people, let's just say two-person relationships, are based upon those two people. It's like two notes on a piano. They either harmonize, they're the same note, they harmonize, or they just don't sound good together. And that's what creates the energy
between
people. The situation and the people involved in that situation, the energies of those people mix. That you have, what is this here? You have 50% of the responsibility.
In any kind of situation, you cannot say, he's responsible for everything happen. No,
right.
You are part of this situation if you have relationship with somebody. So it's 50-50.
And so our energy changes with each person. So if we're with a different person in that same situation, the whole feeling, the whole outcome, the whole energy is going to be different. So we shouldn't be saying it's the situation that caused this. No, I'm part of the situation, and the other person also is, and together we combine to either address the situation, handle it, communicate, empathize with each other.
Yeah, because if you use thinking in past relationship, maybe you have the same problem, and then the way that you handle with one person is different to the other, because it's different energy, different thought, different people.
And so basically what we're trying to do is you become controller of the ego. direct the ego rather than be, I'll call it, victim of the ego.
Yeah, no, so it's important, like that you say, is not control the ego, because when you control, you holding and you maybe repress and maybe explode. So if you direct the ego, is the way that you not feel containment, you know what I mean? It's more like that you can driving through the situation. And the first thing in yourself, because this the first talking about self-honesty.
Be honest to yourself about what's going on and how you are. And that's part of the objective observation. And we talk about self-observation, but it's objectively observing the situation and the other person and you and how you relate. Right. So this is a piece of the emotional intelligence that we've talked about in the past as well. And then the compassion of yourself and the compassion of the other person and how that interrelates, that by looking at things that way, you can kind of pull back from the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you're currently in a situation. Part of what we're going to talk about is how to look at things when you're not in the situation to help the choices you have and how you react when you get back into a situation.
Yeah.
And then finally, you want to talk about the reprogram cycle here?
Sure.
So the reprogram cycle.
So what is the way that we can touch in your brain computer and start to reprogram is visualize first. So see what you want to be, okay? And then when you have cleared this picture, start to believe in this target or goal that you want. Feel this, if you want to be more out of observation or you want to be more compassion in your relationship, so visualize this situation, believe and feel. So when you feel this, you take action.
Okay, so I want to give it like a real example of this. I'm younger, I was an okay student, but I wanted to become a better student.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, how do I become a better student? What do I do? How do I do it? And part of it, I saw myself as, you know what, I'm going to start studying at a nice desk. I'm going to put Mozart on in the background. And I want to be like not a Renaissance person, but somebody who is a learner. So I wanted to act like a learner. So I was thinking of, what are all the things that I need to do? How do I have to feel when I'm learning? What do I need in the background? What kind of lighting do I need? Where do I need to sit? And I created this environment that I would start to do that. And lo and behold, my papers got better. I learned more. I took better notes. I was more present.
You have to have discipline to do that. Okay?
Yes.
Because this is, no, I feel that, I want to be this, I visualize, okay, it's done. No, you need to working hard with discipline, with some kind of the stuff that I'm missing in this
life. I'm sorry, I skipped ahead while I was talking a little bit.
But middle of the sentence.
Perseverance, passion, share it. Yes, I'll share this one more time, and I apologize. I was trying to prepare for the next segment here.
Okay, but in the center you can see be disciplined, has
perseverance,
passion,
and dedication. So it's consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about that in a little bit on some other things. I wanted to go back into this, and there's a reason for it, which is, when I say this, is we always talk about emotions and feelings, and that we're not going to put anxiety in here, but what I want to do this for a reason. Is that we know, it's been proven time and time again, people always refer to these studies and they can do another study and it reinforces the old studies and they're repeatable, is that happy, sad, surprise, angry, disgust, contempt, and fear are universal facial expressions across the globe, no matter what society people are in. That people have these expressions that when you are really, really, really good at reading faces, micro expressions, and then really strong expressions, that those are the facial expressions people have. The problem is that we're not, in order to get a good recognition of someone's facial expression, you have to have almost no emotion when you are observing them. That as soon as you bring emotion into the observation, you change what you think the other person is feeling. I took a couple of quotes from others who did study and research on this subject, and this is important for us to know. All humans may exhibit similar facial expressions for the basic emotions, but have a difficult time consistently reading another person's face. That's one. Contextual framing of an emotionless scene causes an audience to read the emotion that they are feeling into the scene. Again, we've talked about that in the past, that if you as the observer have an emotion, you'll read that emotion into a non-emotional scene. Thus, your partner, we talk about situational moderation of emotion, and we'll talk about that in a minute, or should I say, on how we observe it. And finally, when context is not taken into consideration or the wrong context is primed, gross errors in attribution judgments can often be made. All right, that's a lot to unpack. But what it means is that if you have an emotion, if you have anxiety, if you're angry, if you're happy, whatever you are feeling emotionally, when you go into a situation, you will misread everyone in the room. You will assume that they are more like you're feeling an emotion. Oh, if I'm angry, hey, they're angry at me too. They're angry at me. They're angry. You have the complete misperception of everyone in the room.
And start to assume.
And you start to assume. And this is true. And we talk about situational attribution and moderation of, or so I say, situational moderation of emotion. If your partner comes back from work and they had a terrible day and they come in and you just immediately say something about, hey, this book, you marked something in here. Was this for me to read? And they're really upset about something. They may completely misread the situation because they're angry and think you're yelling at them about something that's in the book because they have been primed with being angry and upset all day at work. And now you come in with, what is this? A completely neutral question, and they think you're upset at them, or they think you're yelling at them. So we need to understand where somebody's coming from and understand their emotions in order to best communicate with them. So we talked about this last time, which was, hey, how did your day go? And right away they'll tell you, why did you ask me that? No, they'll tell you if they had a really terrible day, you know that maybe you should preface and say and ask questions and communicate a certain way. And if they had the most wonderful day, then you know that you know maybe a different way of reacting.
What you call interesting day.
It was the most interesting day ever. What? It was incredible. Incredible? Yes, incredibly terrible. Incredibly wonderful. I don't know.
Interesting.
Terribly good. We were talking about words like that the other day, too. Terribly. Awfully good. So our own feelings, this is it, our own feelings impact our judgment and therefore our actions. Go ahead. I'm going to skip that, and go right into. So when we look at our own emotions, this is part of cognitive behavioral therapy. When you have an issue or a challenge or anxiety or something that you're looking to address, phobias, this is how they're addressed. We're not saying for you if you have a phobia to address it this way, but you can learn from this how to address just normal challenges that you have in your life. And I thought this was a wonderful way of looking at a therapy and how it is used to address really, really difficult things for people and say, how can it be used to address just a little bit difficult things, but how we can use it ourselves? It's almost like, let's do our own coding. Let's do our own cognitive behavioral therapy for those that have challenges that they think are not needing a professional to help them with. So one of the things that are asked in a session is you want to kind of understand the person that you're talking with. And in order to understand them, you have to know something about them. If they come to you and they just say, I have this challenge, you can't then say, and then do this. You need to know a lot about them before you can start to make recommendations on how they should change their thoughts and feelings and actions in order to move them in a direction that helps solve their situations. Today, we're talking about mind hacks. mind hacks to help you code your brain for self-coding, mind hacks. So this is something that if you're having a challenge with anything, these are the questions to ask yourself. So if you're doing a self-analysis, how are my emotions, how is my anxiety, how are my feelings impacting, look at this, all the F's. I came up with all the F words.
Oh.
All the good F words, the ones you can share here. So start with family and friends, those close to you. How do your emotions impact your relationship with your family and friends? Financially, when you go to work, am I so worried about how I do my work? Am I so worried about Joe in accounting or Paulette in finance that I can't, my work's being impacted by my emotions? How is my faith, and not just like faith going to church, but my interpersonal belief, like I believe that we're all connected and that we should all be helping each other out. But if I'm feeling like I'm in a really bad place, I'm anxious, something's bothering me, I stop having that same connection with others.
Yeah.
So what else? Fitness. You know, I'm so stressed out at work. I'm so anxious about the report that's due this next week, that I'm no longer getting up in the morning at the right time, I'm not eating well, I'm not going to exercise, I'm not walking with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
That these are things that impact. Freedom. What does freedom mean?
Freedom is nice.
Well, freedom is like going on vacation and recreating, and I have the ability that take time away from my emotions sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yes, I'm anxious at work, but I know on the weekend, it's the weekend, I don't think about work, I'm fine. On the other hand, it's the weekend and I go away with my family and all I can do is think about this project at work.
Yeah, go back to work.
Yeah, I need to go back to work. Go back to work since your mind is already there. Go back to work.
Yeah.
And then function. Mm-hmm. Can I actually function? Can I do the responsibilities that I need? Can I take care of my family? Can I go to the grocery store? Am I just like, you know what? I'm too anxious about driving. I got into a bad accident a few weeks ago, and now I am so anxious about driving, I will not do that. I need a friend has to drive me to work, and I will not do anything on my own. So these are things. How do your feelings, how does your anxiety, how does your... you know, if you're, quote, scared or fearful of something,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's a relationship, but how do these things impact you? So in therapy, you would kind of get an idea of, one, all these areas with the person, the client who's going through this state where they need some assistance. And you want to see what's their family like, what are their friends like, how is what they're going through being impacting that relationship they have in these areas. And when you understand all that, not only do you understand the impact of the challenges to all these areas, but you understand how they already relate in these areas.
Okay.
And how they want to relate. So if you know how someone wants to relate, you can help them get to that next piece. I want to go back to how animals think. And we talked about this in evolutionary biology and psychology. We talked about Pavlov at one point. Pavlov has the experiment with the dogs where he rings the bell, associates the bell with food. Now he rings the bell and then the dogs drool without food. Quick story short, everyone knows this experiment. The difference between how supposedly animals are programmed and how we are is that we have the ability, more or less, depending on the situation and the person involved, to have thought between the stimulus and response. The more thought we have, the more options we have, the better our response might be.
Okay.
Then we've talked in the past about when you have stimulus and you have thoughts, observe yourself. Observe how you're thinking. Observe, are these thoughts good? Are they bad? So before you make a choice, you're actually observing the whole situation. And then you have your response. And then last, we talked about in our show on coding, we had a show specifically on coding, we talked about is when we have thoughts and we observe, is there something we'd want to change about our thoughts that we just don't know enough about. So we're put in a certain situation. Let's just think about it. I have to do spreadsheets at work, and I'm told I need a spreadsheet done in 5 minutes on Friday, and I get so stressed out about it. How do I react? I tense up. I can't get it done. And I can look on that and just say, I still think about it, but there's nothing I can do because I just don't know enough about doing a spreadsheet. So now I can go back after the fact and go, let me look back at that and go, instead of freaking out and not being able to do anything, let me learn Excel. Let me learn how to do a spreadsheet. And so for the next 4 weeks, I take a little course, a couple hours every week, 15 minutes a day, and I learn how to do a spreadsheet really quickly and rapidly, and I create my own template for doing it. Next time I have to do that spreadsheet really quick, instead of being stressed out, freaking out, not getting it done, I've now taught myself how to do it. I've coded this new skill, right? I have this new skill, and I can handle it, and now I get it done. I've changed how I am.
What happened with somebody maybe have issue to communicate when dating somebody? So how you can apply this technique for people that maybe try to looking for soulmate?
Okay, so when we talk about a difficulty communicating with somebody, is it a situation, or is it a specific situation, or is it a generalized situation? Is it hard time communicating with this person, or hard time communicating with any person in a relationship? If it's this person, it may just be those two people just aren't really connecting. And you can, in your head, go, okay, I have a hard time communicating with this person because we just don't fit. But if it's generally, I have a hard time communicating, it's actually saying, I have a hard time communicating. What would you like to do? And so these are these things. What would you like to do? I would like to communicate better in the relationship. Is it in all relationships, or is it like if I'm just communicating with a woman, I have a hard time. But if it's a guy, I can just talk really, really well. And so is it I'm intimidated? You try to analyze what's the challenge. And then when you understand what the challenge is, you can look at addressing that challenge, how to talk to women. I'm sure there's one book at least on that, right? Yeah. But part of that is, and you go back to the 90 Day Soulmate book, we talk about what you want in a relationship. So earlier today, we were talking about somebody coming out of a bad relationship. And they're afraid now to get into a new relationship because they were in one for a while, and it's now they're just so broken up, I'm afraid to get into a relationship. So in the book, we talk about what would you want in that next relationship. So we're setting a goal of, if I had a perfect relationship, it would be like this. And I talked to you about, I'd want somebody that I'd be able to discuss politics with. And I hope they agreed with me on some of my thoughts. I like somebody who goes bowling. I like somebody who likes to travel and vacation. And so you have, this is the end goal, but you're so focused on a relationship, and a relationship has you scared that you don't even take a step towards it. What cognitive behavioral therapy does is it changes your approach. It says, if you'd like to be able to talk to somebody about politics in a relationship, well, maybe at first you'll just join a political group that is of your persuasion or your beliefs, and you'll just talk to anybody about these political views. So it's a what's easiest to do. So let's actually go into this, and we can talk about how this applies. I'm just skip through here, and go right into here. So I'm going into self-coding. When you have anxiety, you have two choices. Well, you have lots of choices, but let's just pretend it's two. You can approach the anxiety and look at it, okay? I want to be able to communicate with people, but I have a hard time. I can actually go, okay, let me look about solving that. Or I can just not meet with people.
Avoid.
But once you approach in cognitive behavioral therapy, if you're going to approach it, what they say is there's a cognitive approach and a behavioral approach. And one is activity-based, and one is mind and thought based. And I think the next slide, I actually talk about that a little bit. So in the cognitive side, you're going to analyze and look at all those things. I want to be able to talk to somebody in a relationship. But not only talk to them, but I want to be able to talk to them on stuff that I find important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at analyzing why I've had difficulty in the past. And then we look at creating a, and I'm going to go back to getting rid of that thing on screen for a moment. We look at building from a very simple, this is what I can do, one, this is what I can do, 10. One is, again, I'm going to join a group, a photography group, because I want, my end goal is to be with somebody that I can do photography with, and that's my perfect relationship. But I am scared of the relationship, so for now, I'm just going to join a photography group and understand there'll be men and women in that group that will enjoy photography with me, and I will be talking to people who enjoy photography. But I won't be focused on the relationship piece, but I'll take a step towards it. The next is, you know what? I'm going to go out to dinner with a couple of people from the photography class and maybe get to know them a little better. And so you're not looking at the relationship. You're looking at these little things you can do.
So you not go the first dating with the ring.
Okay? With the ring. Yeah. With the camera. You don't bring the camera on the date and say, I want to do photography. So the one is cognitively thinking through. And one of the examples that was in the book I was reading was about somebody so fearful of dogs, they will not go out on a walk because there's a dog in their neighborhood. They're afraid they're going to be bitten. The cognitive side would be analyze how often are people bitten by dogs? Not that often. How many dogs are actually dogs that attack and bite? Mm-hmm. And you try to logically analyze and look at, is your fear based upon reality or not? And it's a cognitive approach looking at trying to have the brain come to terms with its own analysis of the situation that generates the feelings of anxiety. The behavioral side would be, hey, I know you're scared of dogs, but is there a relative or a friend that has a small pet, maybe a small dog, that you're actually okay with petting? And you're like, well, yeah, this one. And you're like, okay, let's put that as the first step on our list. And then you have all these small steps that get increasingly a little bit more, I don't want to use the word risky, mm-hmm. but brave. And they're a little bit more brave for you on the way to being able to walk down the street where there's a dog. Mm-hmm. So one is the behavior, actually doing the petting of dogs. The other is the thinking of and trying to break down. So on the cognitive side is breaking down the thoughts to being realistic. Behavioral side is taking little steps. You take that into a relationship and you say, how do I take getting into a good relationship in little steps? I don't want to jump in, as you said, with a ring on the first date.
Yeah.
But maybe even dates aren't where you need to be right now. Maybe it's just meeting people that have these characteristics you're looking for potentially, and just hanging out with them, communicating, and being part of a fun group without the stress of saying, I need to be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And let that naturally occur and appear.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
So that's, I think, where we are on this whole thing, is that the mind hack is doing it from an intellectual standpoint, trying to add into your brain the thoughts that you need to get you from where you are to where you want to be. Whether it's reading a book like 90 Day Soulmate, reading a book like
While Victoria Dreams,
reading other books on cognitive behavioral therapy, learning about situations, communication, how to communicate with women, how to communicate overall, how to be more of a...
Feel confidence when you communicate, because it's also practice, like that you say. If you feel scared, maybe try. So the practice makes it that you start to reduce these.
It is.
Yeah.
So behavior or action and analysis and thought. Those are two things that can grow with you. The more you read, the more you learn, the more options you have for thinking, the more options you have for response and action. I want to get to one last piece here, if I can find it here. There we go. The reason we want to take action is that if we don't take action, the practice of avoidance increases the chance for further avoidance. That the reward of avoiding a situation, when we avoid a situation successfully, Like, I didn't go for the walk. I didn't get the dogs to bother me. Oh, I feel so good. I didn't have to be anxious. And so I have that reward. That further increases the chance that I'm going to continue to avoid. Mm. And it may be short-term reward where I feel good, but long-term, you still have the anxiety.
Yeah. So try to not avoid and put in the front what you try to improve.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And that is our show for today. Approach anxiety, approach relationships, approach life with thought and action. You'll have a better life ahead of you and for all of us. Have a great day.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.